Paul Bangay. Jonathan.
Lovely to see you.
And to meet you in another garden.
Well, here we are at Cruden Farm, the garden of Dame Elizabeth Murdoch.
Yes.
Now sadly parted, mother of.
Yes.
Wife too.
Grandmother too.
All of that.
Lots of children.
And a garden, you can probably hear just away in the distance, the burble of traffic. Cruden Farm, it was once remote.
It was a farm out in the middle of the countryside. And sadly now all the suburbs have creeped in. Well, I suppose not so sadly, but there are suburbs out there and very busy roads.
And you have a relationship to this place.
I am a trustee, which is makes me sound very important,
oh, it's
doesn't
very
it?
Very proper.
But I'm entrusted with looking after this place with other trustees. There's family members and other trustees, which is, I feel very humbled by and very important.
Well, and it's a considerable thing for a place like this, which has been, well, it's almost a century in the making.
Yeah.
To then have that charge, to carry this forward and to keep it safe.
And that's right. And also, you know, the fact that this person who created this garden lived in this garden for 80 years.
Yes.
You know, I think we've spoken about this before, but not many gardeners get to live in their garden for 80 years.
It's one of the special things. And we've just walked up the driveway here, which is one of the signature features of this garden.
I think if most people know Cruden Farm and think of Cruden Farm, they would think of the iconic Citriodora driveway. And look at them, aren't they magnificent?
Who put them in?
So Edna Walling designed them. So there's a few bugbears here that Dame Elizabeth experienced. One of them was called Edna Walling.
The relationship there was complicated.
Was not good. So I think she, you know, when she married Sir Keith, she was very young.
Yes.
And, you know, she was not very experienced when it came to looking after a house and having a garden. And they went away on their honeymoon and came back, and there was that big Desborough near facade that you can see in front of us. And she always thought that was a bit too pretentious with those big columns there. Now much loved.
Well, and I think it's muted now by landscape.
And it is. And it's funny how those sort of things, you know, a long time ago probably looked very ostentatious, and now we think they're sort of full of character and much loved.
The drive, the plantings, I mean, it surprises me that the trees must be the vintage that they are.
They are. Look, I mean, Edna Walling planted these. Mm. Or designed them. I think they were planted by other people, but she certainly designed them. And she'd put them deliberately close together so they wouldn't get too big.
They're probably, what, 3 metres separate? Let's pace it out. One, two, three.
4 metres apart. Three to four metres apart, which you would never plant them at that distance. But look how successful it is. You get this lovely ribbon.
Such a beautiful effect.
Of verticality going through the property.
And there's a few thicker trunks, but the average would be, you know, about...
No more than 30 centimetres.
In diameters. Amazingly small for such old, venerable trees.
And then, of course, if it would rain in Victoria,
yes,
we would have that lovely smell of lemons.
It will again one day.
Well, please, let it rain.
The facade of the house is a splendid thing. I mean, it's not ostentatious. It's actually quite simple. There's a humble plainness to it.
Well, I think
frontier-y.
It used to be a little cottage. It used to be a little weatherboard cottage, farmhouse. And I think that's probably what she loved about it. And then came back and got this sort of more grander facade. But I also love it. I think it's beautiful.
What's your favourite bit in the garden?
My favourite bit is her cutting garden. So maybe we should walk through the Edna Walling cutting garden.
Yes.
And then we should go over to the Dame Elizabeth cutting garden.
Let's talk about
it. Let's try that.
Elizabeth and Edna. Over this way, can we go on the grass?
So she...
Keep off the grass.
We're allowed to walk on the grass. She really didn't think that Edna did a very good job, and she thought she could do a lot better. I think she possibly was right.
How much did Edna do?
So Edna did the drive, and this walled garden we're now looking at. So the stone is local from the area, which is always a good thing. But I personally find this walled garden terribly underscaled. And when we go to Dame Elizabeth's one, I think she got the scale right.
Because it's a big bit of land.
Big bit of land. A whopping big facade.
And here's
a very small and intimate walled garden.
It's quite lovely.
Come in.
Thank you.
I mean, it's very pretty.
Yes.
So, you know, we've got a grass path about 3 metres wide and beds like 3 to 4 metres wide either side, the classic double border, but tiny.
Yeah, what's it for? Why would you do this in this space, I wonder?
I think Edna just... Well, A, we know Edna Walling loves stonework, and she was very good at stonework. Mm. So I think...
Stonework's very nice.
Stonework is beautifully done. And I think the pond down at the end as the focal point is very successful.
It's a lovely, lovely space around the pond. It comes out here and there's a bulb at the end of this pathway that accommodates this round pond.
And that was what Edna Wadling was great at, asymmetry.
There's the pond
sitting in the middle of the grass path, but then the paving is sort of balanced on the right-hand side and just a tiny little bit on the left-hand side.
And a little concrete koala and
as a water feature.
Child.
Everyone wants a koala as a water feature.
I love that water feature. It's very, very early 20th century.
And then this garden, which is now the swimming pool,
used
to be the rose garden.
Oh,
we nearly lost Jonathan down a step.
There I was, looking at the water, didn't see the step.
And Dame Elizabeth found it too hot. All the roses used to bake in there. So she turned it into her pool, her swimming pool, and moved the rose garden over to her picking garden.
Was that also an Edna rose garden?
That was an Edna rose garden, yeah.
Right, because that was the bit of mythology I had in my head, that there was an Edna Wadling garden that had been converted to a pool.
And there you are. You're seeing it right in front of you.
Nice pool,
quite
too.
Quite a good pool.
Oh, yeah. Just a plunge.
Yeah. Ruined by the modern pool fencing that we had to add to the top of the stone walls.
Oh yes, because urchins would come in from the freeway.
Yes. And scale up a stone wall. A necessary evil.
I can imagine young Rupert.
Swimming in there.
Bombing in there.
I think Rupert had left by the time the pool was put in. And they would come out of the stone wall garden at the other end.
There's a bit of magic in these low doorways, and it's nice to be made to crouch like that. You have a real feeling of entry.
I don't like that sense of getting the scale wrong. Right. You kind of like it.
It feels like it's a little secret garden.
The fact that we're not tall by anyone's measures.
We're not.
And we had to duck.
We did.
These were the lovely stables that were built out of the same
stone.
They're
great, aren't they?
Yeah, they're quite beautiful. There was a dairy.
As you say, a working farm.
And I think, Jonathan, one of the important things to say is, like, this is one of the few gardens in Victoria that are open to the public. Like, you can come in, we're open 7 days a week. People can come in and enjoy these gardens. We're now developing them. We're putting in a visitor centre, a restaurant, a cafe, a shop.
Because, they are absolutely delightful.
Aren't they beautiful? And here is now the garden that Dame Elizabeth created as the alternative rose garden and picking garden.
And it's much more in keeping, isn't it, with the,
it's freer.
The space. Yes.
We're not bound by walls.
Well, the boundary is formed by water and trees.
A beautiful lake. She put that lake in at the same time, so you've got this wonderful sort of big body of water on one side and this Russian olive hedge on this side just to stop the wind a little bit, but big openings into it. So you can see the sense of space is freer, grander.
And when you're within it, that lovely sense of the mixed horizon, of the very close and then the distant just beyond those and close blooms.
And the distance is just sort of enticing, isn't it?
Just wander in. Huh. What a beaut spot. I must say, after a summer that we've had...
It's looking pretty good. It's doing okay, yes. That's the Dame Elizabeth Rose, which was bred and named after her. Which is a great picking hybrid tea rose.
It's got a good whiff.
Yes, it's got a good scent.
Here we go.
You ready?
Yes.
Have a good
smell. Putting my foot right in the garden bed. Oh, that is lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a great colour, like pink blushes on the end
it's
of a sort of...
It's not a big, blousy, overwhelming scent, is it? It's
as she was
sharp.
As she wasn't herself. And so she used to come out here and pick lots of flowers. I mean, she had a wonderful gardener called Michael, who was here for 50-odd years. And this was his pride and joy. And he would pick flowers out of here and do flowers in the house every week.
Well, but
and that tradition's still being carried on.
For now, at this point, as we say, early autumn, the end of summer.
Still lots to pick.
Happy to pick from here.
Hybrid tea roses, they're just fabulous, aren't they? Sort of gone out of fashion a little bit. We all love the David Austins and the softer roses and the more blousy roses. But these hybrid teas last forever.
Give and give.
Flower for a long time and great for picking.
Just describe the beds for us here. What are we?
So they're it's divided into a grid system of beds. So there's like lots of rectangular beds. They're only raised slightly with old timber. Each bed, what would it be, like 6 by 6 by 8 meters or something?
Yeah.
So small enough that you can get in and maintain it, but big enough to sort of give you a sense of planting.
It's sort of a hose reach from any sort of edge, isn't it?
Yeah.
As it were. By which I mean the garden.
Well, I think, being a picking garden, you don't want the beds too deep, so you can actually get in and pick the flowers in the middle of them.
We've got some digitalis there, some stasis there.
Yes. Lovely climbing roses, catmint, irises.
Catmint.
Aquilegias.
I do love a catmint.
I love
catmint.
Can I say? Now, if anyone wants a very hardy summer Mediterranean plant, it's catmint. Like, it'll take high temperatures and not much water.
And still reward you with that lovely...
Lovely purple flower.
Purple flower. And the tone and texture of the leaf is gorgeous.
And the trick is let it flower in spring and then cut it right back to the ground and it'll come straight back into flower again. Everyone forgets to do that.
What else have we got down here? Lead me on.
Foxgloves.
Yep.
The agastache in the back there.
Huh. This is nice.
Honeysuckle.
Honeysuckle pouring over the top of this.
So it sounds a bit twee, but like standards of honeysuckle... But isn't it beautiful? So like a bare trunk and this big head of honeysuckle that in spring...
That must be spectacular.
...is just spectacular, but spot flowers right through the summer.
Yep.
I mean, you and I have spoken about some honeysuckle before because we have it at Stonefields. It's one of the toughest plants and the perfume from honeysuckle is just amazing.
That's a really venerable specimen, isn't it?
That quite old.
Getting on a bit.
Yeah. It has coexisted here for quite a long
more.
Time.
Oh, there's more. Okay, so we have more of them repeated down this central passage.
Yeah. Sort of dotted along this alleyway.
Isn't this lovely? You'd come out here and just potter.
That's the wonderful thing about a picking gun.
Yeah.
Oh. And the lake. Now there is the oak tree.
Let's talk about that because that's an important thing.
That's the important one. So that's the one she planted as an acorn and got to see it 80 years old.
Tell me, what joy that would bring you,
wouldn't it? I mean, my oak trees are only 20 years old.
Yes.
And I still can't sit under them and get shade like you can there. I mean, how wonderful to be able to do that.
There's a good sort of cricket pitch in width underneath the spread of that oak tree.
Yeah, that's 40 metres wide, do you think?
Well,
and sitting by the lake like that and see the chair under that, and how enticing is that just to sit there in the shade of the oak and look at the water with all these wonderful water birds. One tree, though, I want to spot out. The Nyssa sylvatica, do they? See it just turning red on the ends?
Okay, yes.
A tree that loves its feet being wet, growing on the side of water like that. I mean, a lot of people do have boggy situations or areas where it's wet all the time. Nyssa sylvatica, it goes the most brilliant red.
Common name?
Nyssa.
Hmm.
One of those ones that doesn't really have a common name.
I mean, we're about to see a pretty wonderful autumn show
in
this
garden. We are. All the pin oaks colour up, the poplars colour up, the Nyssa particularly, lots of pin oaks in the garden. They were also a beautiful autumn colour.
It has a very European sensibility.
It does. It does. But the thing was a very European heart, but the outer landscape she only used natives for. And so you'll find that a lot of the boundary planting is done with all endemic trees and shrubs of this area.
Was that another point of Edna friction?
No, I don't think so. I think that was done a lot longer.
Right, right.
After it had already gone.
It is such a... You're still... And she's only a few years gone from
ten
us.
Years.
But 10 years.
10 years
now. You feel that presence still. The
you
garden
do,
is,
don't you? Yeah.
Not that I've ever met her. But for a gardener... And I guess this is an increasingly rare thing for someone to come to a place as a young person to create that garden and then leave it when you eventually leave this place.
And that...
As a completed work.
And I find that really rare now. Like, there's so many people that I've designed gardens for and lived in the garden for 10 to 15 years.
Off they'll go.
And off they go. And they just find, you know, the work's too hard or they become too old or... I don't know what part of them gives up on the garden.
Which I totally get. I guess it's there's a broader pattern of our impermanence, isn't there? And
well, you probably find that with houses. I mean, people, you know, move. How often do people move in their life?
I think if this was mine, I probably wouldn't.
I think I probably wouldn't either. I think... And if we could afford to have the gardeners, I guess that would help
that
as
would
well,
help
wouldn't
as
it?
Well.
Exactly.
But it is still... I think that's still a wonderful sort of thought to conjure with, is growing with this garden, the two of you going through life together.
Isn't that wonderful?
It is really... I mean, it's what it should be.
And she was out here working in the garden almost to the year she died. She died at 103. You know, at age 100, she was out still working in the garden with Michael. She'd be on a little buggy going around and telling him what to do and getting out and occasionally poking and prodding and things and picking things. And how wonderful to be able to do that at 100.
You can feel absolutely the sense of a guiding presence in this place.
You can.
And that was hers.
Yeah.
And look, what a fabulous thing that here it is now as a publicly exposed property.
Yeah, so come and visit it. Like, it's, you know, it's a great asset for Victoria and open to the public.
What a treat, Paul. Thank you.
Pleasure.
I feel like getting a bunch of flowers and
taking them home.
Heading off.
Visitors are not allowed to pick us.
Oh, okay. Cruden Farm with Paul Bangay. Thank you, Paul.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.